Dave Barty, economist and former public servant. He served in a number of senior positions in the province, including secretary to cabinet, president of the Institute of Fisheries and Marine Technology, deputy minister of fisheries, and chair of the Public Utilities Board. He has written extensively on public policy, including the issues of fishery, energy policy, and public finance. He's been an active critic of Muskrat Falls based and the basis of its many risks to the province, environmental risks, as well as economic and fiscal risks. His awards for public service include an honorary doctorate from Memorial University, and in his early career, Dr. Barty was a member of the economics faculty at Queen's University. So please join me in welcoming Dave Barty to the stage.
Good evening. It's a pleasure to be here this evening to talk about my favorite topic. Two things I want to say at the beginning. I want to tell you that there's two videos you should watch. They're both online. And one is on the landslide that took place in Rissa in Norway, 1978. And it shows how a whole area, a whole mountain, can collapse in a very short period of time. And it's an area underlain by quicklay, and similar to the North Spur. Only if you watch this video will you really understand what could happen at the North Spur. So I'm hoping that Fane will place this on their website, and I can send it to them. And the other thing is, February of 2017, the Labrador Land Protectors, the Grand River Keeper, held a meeting with the Premier and four of the MHAs. And it was all put, it's been put on Facebook, and they passed the stick from one person to the other. And it was it's very dramatic to watch it, to watch the exposition of the people that are affected by what's happening up there, and explaining in their own words what impact it's having on their lives. And Jim was there, Jim Learning was there, and as were other people who were explaining what the impact of it was. And what they were telling the government was that they're being ignored. Nobody's paying any attention. And that's the big problem with Muskrat Falls. In my opinion, the biggest problem of all is not the economic, the financial. It's the environmental and the democratic. It's the environmental and the democratic. Now, the problem here is you've got people that are affected by what's going on up there. And the North Spur, the methyl mercury are good examples of that. And they have no recourse. There's no mechanism to whereby they can protest and seek change in the project, ask for reconsideration of things that are extremely risky. And the joint panel recommended some mechanisms to be put in place, but they were ignored. Instead, they put in place mechanisms controlled by NALCOR. What was needed were mechanisms were independently adjudicated. And I've used the term ombudsman. They needed an ombudsman, and the ombudsman could be a judge or could be a committee, but it's a place where people can go and have a serious assessment of their concerns. The people have been talking about the North Spur for years are not being listened to. And because there's nobody prepared to sit down and go have an intelligent conversation about it, because NALCOR has decided they've done everything they can, they've got a copper fastened, and they don't want to talk about it anymore. So that's really important. So the point I guess I want to make here is that, and this is all happening, a lot of this is happening in Labrador, it's out of sight of the most of our population, and so it's happening, people on the Avalon Peninsula are not really aware of it, but there's a human rights issue here. There's human rights because people are not, don't have the right to appeal decisions that impact on their lives, which I think is part of the democratic deficit. I'm going to talk a little bit more about the democratic deficit tonight. I'm going to talk a little bit about the Muskrat Falls Inquiry. I'm pleased that the Muskrat Falls Inquiry has been called. I'm pleased that the commissioner has done two things that are good. One is he's appointed a forensic auditor, Grant Thornton. They're doing a very thorough analysis of all the financial aspects, and they're looking at all the assumptions and projections, the demand projections, the cost estimates. They're going to hopefully look at the water management agreement. They're going to look at all the assumptions that went into Muskrat Falls. And then they're going to come out with some sense of what kind of process was underlay the decisions that were taken. To what extent was there a proper consideration of alternatives? And that's one thing. So the second thing the commission is doing is they reached out to the public and they said, what are the questions that the Muskrat Falls Inquiry should answer? And they invited people, and Lon Penny, my colleague, and I, and Des Sullivan put together 42 questions. we also were asked to identify how we could fit those questions in within the terms of reference of the commission. Because one of the problems with the terms of reference is that they're extremely narrow. There's no reference at any point to environment. There's no reference to the North Spur or methylmercury. There's no reference to the democratic deficit. What there is reference to is Nalcor and how Nalcor behaved and how Nalcor carried on its duties. There's no reference to the relationship between Nalcor and the government, which is critically important. There's very little reference to government, as if government had nothing at all to do with Muskrat Falls, as if it was all Nalcor did this, and they now need to be spanked because they were naughty. And so the terms of reference are very deficient, and I could quibble, and have quibbled about the appointment of a judge, a family court judge, because I would have seen a panel of people who were knowledgeable about major projects, and it would include a lawyer. But the notion that all this is going to be wrapped up by a family court judge is a little bit difficult. But I understand he's a very competent man. I understand he's very well respected. And he said about everything I've seen him do up to this point in time, I respect him for it. I think it's great. Now, what do we expect to come out of this? There's two aspects of it. There's the past and there's the future. And I think most people have been focused on the past to figure out, well, how did we get into this situation and who is to blame? And one of the things in the terms of reference, it says very clearly that there will be no prosecution involved. There will be no legal action taken as a result of the findings. That is to say, the commissioner is not empowered to take any kind of legal action against those who may be found to have been neglectful or who may have been subject to criminal action, who may have done things that they shouldn't have done, that may have been undertaken criminal behavior. There's another forum for that. But there's a focus on the past, and it's important for us to understand how we got there. But for me, the most important thing of all is, how do we get out of this? It's the future. What are the options for us to get out of this? And that's where I think we really got to focus the attention. Now, one of the reasons I'm really excited about the inquiry is because I've been at this for close to 8 years, and there's no forum for discussion. I mean, there's really no forum for discussion in this province. There's open line shows. There's Ron and I have been writing letters to our the cows come home, and a handful of people read the letters. There's no extensive network, a forum. It's starting to grow. I think things have changed. But there's a problem there, and I think this what's going to happen is going to be a lot of information put out there on the website of the commissioner when they have their hearings beginning in September, and there's going to be a debate, there's going to be enlightened discussion, and what I like about it is the forum and the way it's gone about it, but we'll see where that heads. But I think fundamentally what we're dealing with here, even though it manifests itself in economics and finance and engineering, this was a politically driven project. And we have to ask ourselves, how do we get ourselves into this mess? How could we put ourselves in this mess where we made those decisions, where we bypassed the Public Utilities Board, we ignored the recommendations of a joint federal-provincial panel that took a fair bit of time and heard people and commissioned research and did a lot of good work, and they made recommendations. They made 84 recommendations. And one of the recommendations they made was that there needed to be a very in-depth analysis, financial analysis, before this project proceeded. That didn't happen. And many of the recommendations, the environmental recommendations in the report of the panel, were not implemented. And I've been, one of the things I did, that Ron and I did about a year ago, was to start to inquire with the Department of the Environment to find out just how much environmental oversight is taking place. It took a long time because we put forward a list of questions essentially saying, what have you done with regard to each of the recommendations? How have you implemented them? For example, there was a requirement that Nalcor prepare an annual report on their compliance with environmental undertakings. So we put that question to the director, the lady in charge of the Department of Environment. It was one of a list of other questions. And we asked, has Nalcor been complying with that particular requirement of the joint panel? Well, the answer we got back was, they're going to comply next year. Next year in Jerusalem. Next year in Jerusalem. Okay, so we'll see you in Jerusalem next year. In other words, no, they have not. But they didn't say that. They don't tell you that. They tell you is that next year they're confident they're going to. But why would they be confident with anything? that Nalcor has done. And but instead of attacking them on faith, why? Because it's all part of a big happy family, because the Department of the Environment is part of the government of Newfoundland and Labrador. And so that's a big part of the problem. If we were dealing with a project like this in Nova Scotia, where Emera was dealing with it, and the regulator was the Utilities and Review Board, it'd be a completely different story. But here, because of the lack of arm's length relationship between the government and the Crown Corporation gets away with everything. So, I don't know how many of you today read Uncle Nero, but Uncle Nero's article today is something you should all take a look at, because it epitomizes what's going on in this province, and it relates to democracy. The story, surprisingly, begins at the Rooms. And the Rooms, several weeks ago, put out a call for proposals for an agency of record, which is a company, a marketing consulting company, to come in and do promotional work and developmental work and artistic work with regard to the activities going on at the Rooms. All great stuff. And then they had a list of criteria of what the people bidding on the project should, what characteristics, attributes, experience, skills they should have. And one of the things they talked about was that in any company that was involved with in serving, a company that is not in line with government policy will not likely get favorable consideration. And in particular, they mentioned that if you're dealing with a company that has been in opposition to Muskrat Falls, then they're not likely to get accepted. In other words, it's pretty clear that the Rooms has been told that they should investigate all the potential contractors to make sure that they don't engage in a contract with somebody who's been a naysayer with regard to Muskrat Falls. Now, that is like the tip of an iceberg, of a great big iceberg. And what's really notable is not the fact that it's happening at the Rooms, but it's the fact that they actually told the world about it. And if they had their time over again, whether would they tell the world, and now that it's been exposed, this has been exposed. But how many of us in this room know of situations where people have been silenced? How many people do you know have been silenced and they've been told that if they say anything about Muskrat Falls, they will be intimidated? I've experienced this. But I mean, it hasn't stopped me. It's like a red flag to a bull. I find it amazing. So many, Ron and I have been at this for the last 6-7 years writing letters. And I think one of the earlier letters we wrote was the letter we wrote to Sean Skinner, Minister of Natural Resources. And we said, you can't go ahead with this project without going to the Public Utilities Board. Surely to God, if we're going to embark on a $6 billion project, we're not going to do it without seeking a full review, which is mandated under the Act, but then they were exempted. And so we embarrassed the minister and the government into holding some kind of a half-assed review. But we tried, before the two of us signed the letter, we approached a number of our former colleagues and we said, would you please sign this letter? No, Dave, we can't sign the letter because I have a son who works in the Confederation Building. I have a brother who works over in Hydro. I got a daughter who works in the Department of Justice. Those people will be penalized. And I've heard so many stories like that about the how people feel threatened. And that causes me an awful lot of grief. It causes me a lot of grief that there's people in this community that are silenced because of intimidation. One of the things I pursued recently was how much money Nalcor is paying out to various organizations. And it will blow your mind. It's $1 million a year in grants that are going out, all kinds of organizations, and there are recreation facilities, and there's cultural organizations, and you name them all, and they're all going out there. And why are they doing that? I mean, is this to keep everybody quiet? I think it is to keep everybody quiet. Why not be honest with you? And I don't know if anybody said that publicly, but it's time for it to be said, that this is the kind of thing we're experiencing here. Somebody's told me that there's files on each of us naysayers in Nalcor, and I'd be curious to know, well, is there a file on me, and what are they going to do with it? Who has access to that file, and what does that do with my human rights? But there's a whole host of things that bother me about the democracy in Newfoundland and Labrador, I started listening to them today. Because I'm going to write something on this soon. There's something boiling up about this whole issue. And when I saw the thing about the rooms in the Uncle Nerdy today, I said that got me really, you know, concerned. But it was also sort of it motivated me as well, because I said this is something we have to pursue, and we must pursue. But the there's a whole, as I said, there's a whole host of things there that are bothersome in terms of what's been going on. There were one thing I got involved with this afternoon was waiting an ATIPA request because I'm aware of some political interference that took place with the Public Utilities Board, and I'm not going to say too much about it tonight because you'll hear about it. But I've been writing, Ron and I have been involved in letters and correspondence with the PUB to find out just what kind of pressures were being placed on the Public Utilities Board, and got pretty good evidence that there was pressure placed on the Public Utilities Board. And trying to actually get this information out, but there's a lot of resistance within the system to admitting what actually happened. The other thing that I know about, and I can't prove it, is that when the Joint Environmental Panel was here having its hearings, that of the people that were presenting evidence on the wildlife and the impact of Muskrat Falls on caribou, on fish, and other things, that all this these presentations were being vetted by NELCOR. And this is a big concern, because you wonder is whether the joint environmental process was contaminated by this kind of inappropriate influence. So it goes back to the powers that were given under the Energy Corporation Act to NELCOR, and their unusual powers. And of course, those powers include the power not to disclose the salaries, the contracts of these embedded contractors that are over there making a lot of money within NELCOR. And in fact, I think it was the lack of access to that information that prompted the Premier to call the inquiry, the Muskrat Falls inquiry. So there's a big democratic problem here, and I hope that the Commissioner deals with this issue. But I think all of us need to, because we have all tolerated this. We've got too much tolerance for things going on that shouldn't be happening in our society, where there's things that are happening that shouldn't be happening, and things need to be above board. And there's democracy in Newfoundland has always been a fragile flower, and it hasn't been growing very well in recent years. I remember back after the Smallwood era, change in government, and the government of Frank Moore has started to bring in some issues or some processes with regard to public service appointments. They created a public service commission to try to take the politics out of it. But you know something? The politics kept coming back in. Well, I was the Deputy Minister of Fisheries from 1989 to 1994. And the Public Service Commission was starting to devolve responsibilities for recruitment. And I kept saying, please, I want the Public Service Commission to stay and do this. I don't want you to put it back in my department, because I don't want the political process to take control once again. I want there to be a merit. There's got to be merit-based criteria. Public Tendering Act, another thing that was introduced. It's a pretty strong Public Tendering Act that Minister William Marshall introduced at the time. There was a lot of controversy, but because there was some resistance, but it did get put in place. But you still see a lot of favoritism, a lot of contracts being awarded based upon who you know and how much money you're donating to the party. And then one of the big problems we have is our financing of parties, and financing of elections, because every government promises they're going to deliver something, trying to put some cold controls in place, and they never deliver. They never deliver. So we had a lot of problems with our political system, and somebody recently described the problem this way. And it was just a conversation I was having while I was on a trip to Labrador, and the person was from Montreal, one of the presenters, and he said, problem is that our political leaders are accountable to their parties. They're not accountable to the legislature, particularly when their party controls the legislature. And so they can defy the parliament, they can defy the people, as long as they have the parties on side, they're okay. It is up to the next election. So I think there's a lot of truth to that about the political party system. And I don't have an answer I don't have an answer to any of these questions, but I think we have to focus on trying to solve this problem. Because going back again to the people, friends of mine, who keep saying, I cannot speak on this, and I cannot be seen talking to you. Dave Verity, you and I have been great friends for many years, but I am not going to be seen talking to you, because I might be blacklisted. And my response to those people is, do you want to live in a society like that? Do you want to bring up your kids in a society like that? Are you prepared to accept that? Because I'm very disappointed in you if you're prepared to accept that. So I think we've got to, we the citizens have to demand changes in our system. I don't see any other way around it.